The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Keep on, keep on.
All right, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you on a Thursday morning. It is Thursday, August 15th already, halfway through August, and days are starting to get a little shorter, I'm noticing. You probably see a little fog out there this morning that's burning off, and going to have a halfway decent day. I do hear about some thunderstorms in the forecast, and we'll be hearing that from the National Weather Service in just a moment. We have a great guest today. We have Brian Andrews. He's the president of County Ambulance, and Brian is here to talk about emergency medical everything, I guess, when we talk about the kinds of responses that an ambulance company makes and kind of special things that happen in the community, such as a visit from the Vice President of the United States. And, you know, you might not think that an ambulance company would be involved in such a thing, but you know, we're going to explore all of that today with Brian, and also talk about an award that the company recently received, and some talk about training on EMTs, all kinds of good stuff we're going to talk about with Brian in just a moment. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly sunny. Patchy fog this morning. A slight chance of showers this morning, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty wind and small hail this afternoon. Highs in the lower 80s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 30%. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then clearing. Lows in the upper 50s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Friday, mostly sunny. Highs in the mid-80s. Light and variable wind, becoming southwest around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, so you're going to have to look out for those showers and maybe a thunderstorm later on this afternoon. Might be a good idea to bring your umbrella, raincoat, something like that, just in case that crops up. It does happen this time of the year for sure. And so always be prepared is what I say. All right. So welcome again to the show. Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield. And Brian Andrews, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Sean. Thanks for getting me up nice and early today to come on in for an interview.
Yeah, nothing like a good morning wake up, right?
Yeah, I'm usually awake. I just don't like to roll out of the bed.
Yeah, I hear you. Same here. That's why I do it on Thursdays and Fridays. I don't know if I could do a daily morning. I have a lot of respect for the morning people on TV and radio. It's a lot of work, and all the production people that go into it too. I actually have a friend who works in Boston and works for one of the stations out there, and his gig is the morning as an engineer, and he's up at 2:30 in the morning to get to work. I don't think I could do that.
Good for him.
I'll take the morning drive here for 7:30. So thanks for being in on the show this morning, and I want to talk to you about the vice president's visit because, again, people might not think that all the different things that are involved when, you know, a major figure, political figure, celebrity, I guess, or whatever, but especially that level of the president or the vice president visits your town, your city, all the things that go into something like that. And right down to the fact that you need to have emergency preparedness ready to go, right? Not only is there Secret Service protection and police protection and everything else, but you need to prepare for even the worst things that could potentially happen on a visit like that.
Yeah, absolutely. there is a tremendous amount of planning that goes into that. And, you know, I don't think people realize what happens behind the scenes with that.
Yeah.
And
maybe you can let us shed a little light to that this morning, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's certainly changed over the years. This was not our first foray into the VIP activities like this. My first exposure to this was back in the early 90s with the passing of Silvio Conti. Mm. And Vice President Dan Quayle was coming in for the funeral at St. Joseph's, as right. well as the entire congressional delegation. And at that time, there was little planning that went into it. They basically, I got the call because I was a newly certified tactical medic, and they said, oh, you've been chosen to help us out here.
Wow.
Oh, great. And basically, they just told you, all right, be at St. Joseph's church, be in the back of the church, watch this medical guy that travels with the VP. He'll tell you what to do, but don't move unless they tell you.
Huh.
And then over the years, we've had, you know, of course, Hillary Clinton came here when she was first lady to talk about the colonial renovation. And we have had the Bush daughters come here quite frequently, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And obviously, they're not as high profile as they used to be, but they come to the area to do hiking and things like that. Hmm. So
even at that level, there's some preparation going on.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, they make sure they know what the hospital is capable of. They check on blood supplies. They check on, you know, helicopter, the whole nine yards.
No kidding.
So, you know, and that's in addition to the security aspect to this whole thing.
Yeah.
So
with the VP's visit, for example, and I think I spoke to the folks from the Eagle about their coverage of the vice president's visit. And they said that actually that there were some things in the works for a month or more before the actual date. Is that about accurate? Is that when you first started hearing that potentially you could be involved with it?
No.
Oh.
I think the Secret Service, because they're so busy and it's evident that they could always use more staff, that they're just, coming in at the last minute and here's what we need and ready to go. So it was literally, I think, maybe 10 days before that I got notified by Chief Dolly's office from the police department that there's going to be a planning meeting. And we kind of, you know, we already knew from the media coverage that she was coming.
Yeah.
So we anticipated that call would come.
And so there's a good amount of interdepartmental coordination as well, right? There's a lead, but then it pulls in everything that is needed for the visit, as emergency management, police, security, public works, right? All these different departments are needed to make sure that everything functions flawlessly.
Yeah, it kind of proved that the Secret Service leaves it up to the locals to, they just come in and say, this is what we're doing. This is what we'd like to accomplish. And of course, their mission is, you know, dignitary protection.
Sure.
And we're going to let you tell us what resources you have and how we might make best use of those. So, the first planning meeting involved probably, I would say, 12 to 15 of their field agents who all had specialties in different areas. And then we had everybody from the police department to the state police, to the fire department, to us, the sheriff's office, DPW or Department of Public Services, in the hospital system, all there to meet with the Secret Service. So they start out telling you, this is the plan.
Yeah.
And they give you very little information, I think, both for security reasons and they do everything on the fly, a lot of it.
So, no kidding.
So they don't know the timing at this point.
But they're not the experts of this area, for example, right? They might be regional or whatever, but they don't know a lot about Pittsfield when they come in. So they're relying on you and everyone here in the area to let them know, you know, what the lay of the land is, what assets you have to work with. I'm sure that they pick the route and all that stuff.
Right? Yeah, they spend a lot of time over that week with the police department, with representatives from the police department, you know, and did everything from getting blueprints of the colonial to what are the different routes, what are the different bottlenecks, you know. And so it was I don't want to say easy for us, but it kind of was easy for us because we collaborate on every large event in not only Pittsfield, but Berkshire County. So everybody knows each other. We all know what our assets are. We all know kind of what our responsibilities are. So it makes planning a little bit easier, but there's still a tremendous amount of planning that goes into it. I do a presentation at EMS conferences around that. The title of it is "It's More Than Just a Band-Aid," and it talks about the fact that, you know, in the old days when we would get a call, hey, we want you to stand by at the local, you know, fair, or we want you to come to this concert we're having. It was basically you just showed up with an ambulance and you sat there and ate the free hot dogs they'd give you and hand out Band-Aids.
And for the most part, nothing big happens, at least you're hoping, but you still have to be prepared for the worst thing that could happen, I would imagine.
Yes. But right. But what happened is EMS really did not value its own role, and so people would go into it not prepared. They would just show up and not have a plan of, okay, if it hits the fan, how are we going to manage this? And there's still, unfortunately, a lot of agencies, municipalities that approach it that way. We don't. I mean, because of my background and the things that we've been involved with, we actually, for anything special like this, come up with an incident operational plan. Sometimes it's consolidated with other agencies. So, for instance, annually we do the Mercy Sunday event at the National Shrine, which, as you know, I'm sure from the production side of it and what they do TV-wise and otherwise, is a huge production. Well, it's also a very big production for us because, first off, depending on where Easter falls in April, it can be the front of April, which is still could be potentially cold.
Yeah, winter.
Or near the end where it can be, you know, very warm or somewhere in between. So we actually generate a plan that involves the police and law enforcement aspects of the event. It will involve the fire department and what they will provide for assets. And then, you know, we put together a plan. And it's based on a national model. It's called the National Incident Management System. Which talks about, you know, what are all the levels of preparation that you need to have, knowing where you're going to get them, and in many of the cases, making sure they are aware that you have this going on. Because sometimes what happens in a community, they operate kind of in a silo or a vacuum and don't let surrounding communities know what's going on. If things really do go awry, suddenly, you know, they're relying on resources they didn't know they were being relied on.
Yeah. Well, I would think communication there is probably the key. And you mentioned Mercy Sunday, so that's a very large crowd for this area. I mean, probably.
Yep.
But it's still in the, what, tens of thousands
of
people?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's a good crowd. For any area, that's a good crowd. And it isn't like they're going to be, you know, you don't expect violence to break out necessarily, but, you know, you certainly could have medical emergencies. You have a lot of people that maybe, don't get out maybe much there, or maybe have some medical issues, underlying issues that present themselves, you know, in a big situation that's kind of packed in and stressful and things like that. So I would imagine every one of these different situations has its own character and things you have to prepare for.
Absolutely. I mean, just as an example, Mercy Sunday, we've had days where it starts out very cold in the morning. So here are these, you know, elderly people, people who have disabilities and medical conditions who are coming there, and they're all bundled up in coats and hats and, you know, in the high 30s of some years. And by noontime, the sun comes out and it can hit 70 degrees. And we've had years where people started passing out from the heat because they, you know, they're sitting on benches. They have nowhere to put their coat, so they leave their coat on. And, you know, we had a couple years ago, where a snowstorm came through, you know, and left a couple inches, and it affected, you know, tents that were there and things like that. And we've had high wind storms. But you know, you right, talked anything, about
it's outdoors, so that adds another right. factor to it, right? The weather and
right.
Yeah, uncertainty.
And you mentioned that violence isn't a consideration. Mm. Well, it is because it being a religious event, it's a potential terrorist target.
Mm.
So the state police are involved in the planning and their fusion center, and they do an intelligence, you know, scan and see what's out there, depending on who the guests are. So the vice president. Definitely, you know the climate in our country right now. The politically, we're very volatile.
Right.
So,
and that's true. You have to think of everything like that. And certainly, the vice president's visit happening just a week after an attempted assassination of the former president at an outdoor rally. I'm sure everything. Sort of was brought to a different level, a higher level at that moment than maybe if it had happened a week before or 2 weeks before.
Yeah, I think I'm okay in saying that there was a mention by the lead agent multiple times through the planning meeting that we don't want to have happen here what happened in Pennsylvania a few weeks ago.
I can imagine.
We want to make sure that communications are clear. And I will say, due to the commitment of our local people, you know, the police chief, the fire chief, the sheriff, we actually requested another meeting because we were all not comfortable that things were, really solid in the planning process. And so we had an additional meeting on Thursday before the Saturday visit. And at that point, everything came together.
Mm-hmm.
That first meeting, we walked out of there. We were looking at each other going, oh, my God. We didn't get a whole lot of information here.
And again, as you said, some of that's probably by design, but at the same time, you need that information. You need the communication to know what your role is and what you're doing, where everything's going to be.
Yeah. And you also find out that things are vague because they truly don't know. You know, you've got the Secret Service, who really is at the beck and call of the vice president in terms of what their schedule is going to be. And then you find out that the vice president and president, their schedule is really controlled by their staff, controlled by, in this case, you know, the DNC and the group that's raising the money and putting on the event. So there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
And so doing proper planning makes sure that you have the pieces in place and you've just got to massage the schedule when it comes. And I'm trying to think. I don't think we even knew until Friday, the day before, what the schedule would be. And that is stressful in itself because here you are. We knew what resources we needed to bring together, but how would you like to tell an employee, well, we're going to need some help here, but it could be in the morning, it could be in the afternoon, it could be at night. We just know it's going to be on that day.
Yeah.
And, luckily, we have good staff, so everybody was ready to go, and they said whatever time it is, we'll be good for it.
And there was also some question at one point as to whether the thing would happen at all, right? The president, Joe Biden, decided not to be the nominee of the party anymore. That was the previous Sunday, and suddenly we're saying, well, does she come to Pittsfield or not? We don't know. And then it was off and it was on. Let's talk about the day of the event here now, too, and the assets that you have on the ground. And just to remind people who are just joining us, we're talking to Brian Andrews. He is the president of County Ambulance here in Pittsfield, and we're talking about the vice president's visit to Pittsfield a few weeks ago. What is it that they asked you to bring? Because you were in multiple places, right? It wasn't just at the Colonial Theater.
Yeah. The Secret Service says, listen, this is what we need. And again, their mission is the protection of the vice president.
Yeah, they're calling the shots.
And it's up to, you know, local people to decide what else might we need in addition to that. And so one of the considerations we had to make is, we need to know what you need for assets from us for the vice president. But then we need to think about what is the potential for the Colonial venue, you know, where you have an event that, although it seats 760 people, I think, how many people are going to show up out front that are going to, you know, be observers and dependent on the weather.
Protesters, so, potentially,
protesters
too.
Was a big discussion.
Yeah.
We found out from their intelligence folks some things that were happening at other vice president appearances due to this whole, Israel conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, they basically said to us, we need two ambulances. We need one paramedic ambulance and one basic ambulance to be part of the motorcade. And they're assigned to that motorcade. They're at our beck and call, and they're committed the entire time.
So that includes going to the airport,
yes,
at Barnes Airport in Westfield, to greet the VP at the tarmac, right, all the way through?
Yep. Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people would think, all right, this was only a 45-minute, hour-and-a-half visit at the Colonial. Yeah, sure. But for us, I mean, basically, I was at the command post at 9:30 that morning. We had two ambulances that left Pittsfield at 10 because they needed to get to Barnes for 11, and they had to go through a security screening with bomb dogs,
right,
and, you know, that
all
whole
takes
thing.
Time. Yep.
Absolutely. And then sit there and hope that the vice president's going to be on time.
Mm.
And then once she arrives, you know, does their meet and greet. And about the time that was occurring, well, no, an hour before that, we had our folks deploying at the Colonial.
Okay.
So we had two crews of people, four people inside the Colonial, basically in case any event occurred.
Yeah.
You know, they were in there, and it took time for them to go through screening because they're bringing in equipment, and the Secret Service wants to go through the equipment. They don't trust anybody.
No. Nor should they, right?
No, yeah. No. And then we had one ambulance that was there for transportation in case that those four people had any event.
Hmm.
And then we took an extra precaution and put an ambulance on the west side of South Street to manage the crowd, because the other thing is we couldn't plan to have the responders we had inside the Colonial to be able to run back and forth should things happen outside.
Right. So, and it might be tough also to get something in at that point because everything sort of had been locked down after the vice president got there or so, even
absolutely.
Before.
Yeah, exactly. So, about noontime, we had all those assets deploying there. And then, you know, we had those two ambulances that were signed from 10 a.m. until her plane departed at, I think it was 3:50 from Barnes.
Yep.
So it was, you know, a long event,
right.
When people, some people who didn't even get to see her, because again, you know, staging was discussed in preparations. And, you know, as much as we tell everybody don't talk about this, the word gets out. And, you know, there were people lined up on certain routes thinking they're going to wave to the vice president. And that morning, the Secret Service decided, no, we're changing the route.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what we're doing. So,
which I'm sure they probably had in mind anyway, right?
I think they did. You know, they probably planned that. Yeah, we're going to tell all the locals this is what we're doing. Then we're gonna change it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's little curveballs that get thrown at you, such as they'll never acknowledge it, but I believe they have cell phone blocking capabilities that travels with the motorcade. So we lost phone communications with our crews.
Interesting.
Yeah, their cell phones suddenly didn't work during that time period. But again,
Did that disrupt your communications of being able to do your job? Because that would be difficult, right? If unexpectedly you needed to communicate and you couldn't.
Yeah, and again, one of the advantages we have here is in Massachusetts, there is a statewide radio system that goes from border to border, and it was originally designed for the state police because the state police were, you know, for years on low band radio because, you know, low band travels longer distances, but there were a lot of dead spots.
Mm-hmm.
So after 9/11, a lot of money, of course, got invested, and this system, I know just in Berkshire County, one of the build outs was $40 million.
Wow.
Just to cover from 91 West.
Yeah.
So that radio system we frequently put into use. It's got multiple channels that can be isolated on it and programmed at a moment's notice. So the state police work on their channel on a regular basis. And then there's other towns that their goal now is they want to put all the municipalities on it, and you'll all have your own. And if a big event occurs, they can tie you in with each other.
Hmm.
And so,
which is the kind of communication they didn't have on 9/11, for example.
Exactly.
Right? What precipitated that change?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and it's more work, it's more planning, and I don't want to say it complicates things, but it makes things a little more intricate. And so, a lot of communities say, nah, our vent isn't big enough for this. Well, I can tell you from years of doing this, those are the times to use it because you get the practice of it, understand how it works and the capabilities and its limitations so that when something like this happens, you know, we're big partners locally with Massachusetts Emergency Management. And MEMA has a local rep who, you know, we just make the phone call. He's at the meeting. So he was at this meeting, and we initially talked about, listen, we want an event channel set up and designated for this. There was a second channel that was designated for some of the security. And so my folks who were down at Barnes Air Force Base, normally you would have to rely on cell phones because our radio system doesn't reach down there.
Yeah.
But they had these event radios, and so we were able to talk to them real time.
Nice.
You know, from the command post. And, you know, that's very helpful. And then the day, you know, the communications, of course, Secret Service has their own encrypted secret channels that they operate on. But they integrate into everything. So there was a security command post that was just Pittsfield Police, State Police, and the Secret Service. So they could do their whole, you know, law enforcement piece. And then we had a Secret Service agent who was within the command post with us. We stand up what's called a unified command post.
Okay.
And a unified command is just all the representatives from the different disciplines that are important enough that they need to be talking to each other real time. So a lot of times we used MEMA has this has a couple mobile emergency operations centers in their trailers that just they bring up, pop out the sides of it, and it has everything from satellite TV to smart boards to you can communicate with anybody you want to copiers to plotters to build maps.
They got Netflix in there?
You could get it, yes, yes. And believe it or not, we use it every year for the parade.
Okay.
And so we actually will use this capabilities to tune in the parade and be able to see what you guys at PCTV are broadcasting and know, you know, where things are and how it's proceeding.
Nice.
So, you know, it's in this case, the Secret Service apparently didn't want the mobile EOC. They felt it would take up too much room in that parking lot.
Hmm.
So we utilized the Sheriff's Department's command vehicle.
And it is certainly a tight little quadrant of Pittsfield, right? On the South Street there, there's certain ways in and out that can be controlled. And obviously we know now from retrospect that they changed the route so that the vice president came in from the back door.
Yeah.
She did not come down South Street as many people were expecting as the folks were there, you know, at the gates or whatever. So, you know, they didn't get a chance to glimpse at her. And it probably makes a lot of sense, actually, thinking about it, that was probably never going to happen. But the fact is that it still had to all be sort of planned out that, and as you said, at least 10 days and maybe more before that. And so we're talking again as we're getting close to the top of the hour here on Morning Drive. We're talking with Brian Andrews, the president of County Ambulance. We're talking about the vice president's visit to Pittsfield that just happened a couple weeks ago, and all the things that have happened before and since. And this is an event that made national news on a couple of levels. And I know that we're getting to the top of the hour. I'm sort of teasing what we might talk about right after the break. But it's certainly as she was, this was her first real public event of any kind, speaking event, whether it was a fundraiser or a rally or not. It was a fundraiser in this particular instance as the presidential candidate. Previous to that, she was on the ticket as a vice presidential candidate, and that still carries a lot of weight, obviously. But when you're the presidential candidate, I'm sure it takes on a huge new meaning. And Brian was just describing all of the different Secret Service agents that were involved in different places, one stationed with you, and who knows how many they had total to make this event, you know, successful and safe for everyone. Afterward, there was somehow a small story that started and grew to be somehow a national story about how a particular business in town was entered by the Secret Service and maybe without permission, or at least knowing permission from the owner of that business. And so we're going to explore that a little bit in our second half here with Brian. And you know, it's just amazing how stories like this bloom and blossom from a very small little incident. But I'm sure, you know, bigger to certain people than it is to others. But we'll talk about that in the second half here with Brian Andrews, the president of County Ambulance. In just a moment, we're going to do that top of the hour break before we do that, and thank our underwriters, and also to give you some PSAs and our station identification, as we always do. So stick around for the second half of Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Hello, this is Congressman Richard E. Neal, and you're listening to 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union. Proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal. Opportunity grows here. With locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from Evco Hypnosis. Want to lose weight, quit smoking, sleep better, or relieve stress and anxiety? Evco Hypnosis is here to help you become happier, healthier, and stronger. Call 413-212-0283 or go to evcohypnosis.com. That's EVCOhypnosis.com.
Pittsfield Community Television has relaunched our website at pittsfieldtv.org with a new design to make it easier to find our live streams with PCTV Select, where you can watch live sports, city meetings, and more. Now it's simple to find our past shows on demand and future TV schedules. You can also quickly find information on how to be a member, our upcoming training sessions, and how to donate to PCTV. Check it out at pittsfieldtv.org.
What would it be like not having PCTV's reliable coverage of our Pittsfield City meetings? Well, the answer is it would be like driving in the darkness without headlights. We need the light to show us exactly what's coming our way. PCTV's coverage is that light. It's so reliable and dependable we don't even think about not having it, but nothing can be taken for granted. Support this building block of democracy today. It's too important to lose, especially now. Pittsfield Community Television, see it all. Decide for yourself.
Hey friends, if you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8, and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you, live and local as we always are on Thursday and Friday mornings here from our WTBR studio on 4 Federico Drive. Brian Andrews is my guest this morning. He's the president of County Ambulance, and we're talking to him about the vice president's visit and also some other stuff coming up in this half hour about EMT training, an award they've received by the AMA, which is pretty cool, and some other stuff about emergency medical treatment and ambulances, all kinds of interesting stuff coming up. First, we'll go to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today.
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly sunny. Patchy fog this morning. A slight chance of showers this morning, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty wind and small hail this afternoon. Highs in the lower 80s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 30%. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then clearing. Lows in the upper 50s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Friday, mostly sunny. Highs in the mid 80s. Light and variable wind, becoming southwest around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, still some pretty nice summer weather out there. A little bit of a thunderstorm or some rain showers to keep in mind. But other than that, enjoy what's left of the summer here. I hate to hear back to school already, but they are definitely talking about that. I'm sure I was actually shoe shopping over the weekend and happened to hit one of the back to school sales at one of the stores I went into. Oh my goodness, I forgot all about that. I forgot what kind of craziness goes on at a shoe store during back to school. Yeah, interesting. But enjoy the rest of your summer for sure as you get a chance to listen to more WTBR's Morning Drive. Brian Andrews, thanks again for being here this morning. Appreciate you talking to us.
Absolutely. Anytime, Sean. You
know. Yeah. So we kind of got to the day of the vice president's visit in the first half hour. And start to hear after a couple of days after the event that there was something kind of odd that went on at a business close by to the event. And it was from, I think, 413 Salon, which is nearby, like on the Wendell Ave side of that whole block. And the owner there, I guess, had complained that the Secret Service had kind of forced their way into her business so that they could use the facilities, essentially. And that, I assume, was passed down to you as well and other people who were sort of on the detail that day to be able to use that facility. As you had mentioned, it is a long hitch. The day is a long day, and you got to expect that humans need to have bathroom breaks once in a while, right?
Yeah, and as I said, we do an incident operational plan, and we have that available that contains all the logistics and all the schedule and all the things that we'll need. And I can tell you that when we're done with an event, we do kind of a lessons learned. Mm. Sometimes we do an after-action meeting where we get everybody together and we talk about, what went right, what went not so right. Yeah. How can we make it better? And one lesson learned here is bathrooms. And it's interesting, of all the years that I've been doing this and all the years we've had events of varying sizes, bathrooms have not necessarily been a huge issue, because mm-hmm. you're in an event, whether it be a concert or whatever, where there's bathrooms close by. And of course, being a guy over 50, I'm always thinking about that. Mm-hmm. But even the 4th of July parade could be at times a challenge.
Absolutely.
Because we're at Columbus and North in the command post. Mm. And used to be we'd run into the intermodal station and go to use the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Well, they've since closed that due to various reasons.
Yeah.
So then it was run down to the fire station.
Oh, boy.
It's a little larger run, and you just hope nothing goes wrong while you're out of your seat.
Mm.
But you know that the other people will handle it. And then they had to begin to close their doors because people were wandering in and out.
Mm.
So this one, there was no discussion about bathrooms. I remember that morning we were set up, and we had two women in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And they were from Berkshire Health Systems, and they do their emergency management planning, and they were integrated in the command structure. And one of them said, well, I need a bathroom.
Mm.
And somebody said, well, yeah, the 413 Salon across the parking lot is available for that. And off they went and used it.
And there's no option to go to the bathroom at the Colonial Theater, right? Because at that point, with everything locked down there, you can't be coming in and out of that building, I would think.
Right. Yeah. That would have presented a challenge because it was, locked down, and getting in and out would have taken you security screenings and everything else. And you probably would have been viewed as suspicious running in and out of there. So, there's no fast food restaurants close by. So, I unfortunately did not see who gave the authorization, because I was in the command post and listening to the radio. And again, at that point, our people are at the airport, and they're doing their thing. So I'm listening and talking to them, and we log into the what's called WebEOC. It's MEMA has it, and it's basically an activity log of everything happening across the state. And so we enter our activities in there, and it gives us, if things go wrong, we can request resources, and the state office in Framingham sees that and can assist us. But irregardless, they went to the bathroom, and you know, no harm, no foul, as far as I knew. And then
and that building had been opened and secured essentially by the Secret Service, I assume.
Yeah, I don't know the details of it. I just know that the girls went over there and you know, it wasn't locked. They went in, they used it. And so no thoughts to me. And then later in the day, probably 2:30, when the motorcade has showed up, you know, my supervisor who was leading the motorcade operation, I heard him come over to the command post, and he was outside and asking a bunch of folks, hey, my females in the motorcade need to use the bathroom. Oh, yeah, go over to the salon. And so off the girls went and used the bathroom. And then lo and behold, you know, I thought it was kind of neat on Sunday morning to see on the CNN news, you know, picture of Kamala Harris talking at the Colonial. Well, then it was either Monday or Tuesday morning, I get an email from the police chief tipping me off that, well, the owner of 413 said they didn't give permission and they're a little upset. And here's some video, and lo and behold, I look at the video, and it's our girls going, you know, using the bathroom. So, you know, as my life goes, I didn't get to do anything with it right away, but within a day or two, started working on an apology. You know, I still don't know. I immediately picked up the phone and I called some of the people who were at the planning meeting and said, "What's your recollection of this?" And actually, the girls from Berkshire Health System said, "I remember in the last planning meeting there was a discussion that the salon was going to be available for our use." Okay, well, I don't know. For some reason, I'm the center of the controversy here because my people were the ones videoed.
Well, it seems like the Secret Service is the one that definitely has some answering to do for it, right? Because if that's what they have, you know, secured and opened and said, okay, go ahead and use it. And they, I think, have publicly apologized for what they did, right?
Yeah, my understanding is they immediately said, listen, you know, they did their usual political dance, I guess, that, well, we would never authorize that, but we'll take full responsibility and we'll pay for any damages, you know, incurred by that. Yeah. So,
and I assume that after the events in Pennsylvania, that was probably the last thing they wanted was another controversy surrounding the Secret Service or what they did on the ground in a particular area. So
I do think there's some still communication errors that occur with them, and you know, they've got to maybe I don't know their job, but I don't want to tell them what to do, but they probably need to communicate better.
Listen, but with all those details, right, as we talked about in the first half hour, all the different things that have to fall into place and be absolutely perfect for the safety and security of everybody involved, and there are going to be details sometimes that fall through the cracks.
Yep.
And, you know, if it's a bathroom, that's, to me, if you're thinking of the difference between, you know, having someone up on a roof shooting a president or a former president versus a bathroom being used, I would say I'd take the second one any day.
Yeah, I'm definitely on the on the scale of priorities, yes. But I also understand as a business owner, you know, how violated you would feel if there's people in your business that you weren't expecting. Yep. And I totally get that.
And probably also they would normally have hours during that time, right, where they'd probably be making pretty good business. Saturdays at a salon, pretty busy time, right? So the owner probably could not open the business and everything, so she walks away and then finds out that there was this big disruption at their business. I could understand where that would be upsetting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I even understand the whole camera thing. You know, the Secret Service, the view of that camera would allow you basically to see the motorcade come in. So if you're looking for nefarious, you know, things to do there, if you had access somehow, which those security systems are fairly easily hacked, as we see in the news, somebody could see the motorcade pull in and say, okay, now I'm going to pop up and do whatever. So I understand why they taped it off. But if you don't communicate with the people who own it, And again, I don't know that the security aspect wasn't my part of the planning, so I don't know that. I certainly feel awful for that business owner, and but it's affected us in that there's two videos that keep popping up, and that's the Secret Service agent taping the camera, and then my girl's using the bathroom. And grabbing them, 1 minute off the receptionist desk that had a candy dish there. Well, and
that's how legends are born also right now. Suddenly it's an entire bowl of mints or whatever.
Absolutely. That's what I saw. I think it was on Twitter. They took a handful of mints and, that's theft. And so my girls felt truly, awful, and they're young, so they don't understand this kind of stuff can happen.
And of course then it propagates from a little story here in Pittsfield, which is bad enough, to a regional story where it's shown in Boston, Springfield, places like that, and then suddenly I look on CNN and they're reporting it there.
Yeah,
it's just crazy how these things will carry.
My first clue that this was not going to be good was, I think on the Thursday following, I got a call from Josh Landes from WAMC. Hey, I would like to get a comment from you. About what? Well, so I made a comment.
Sure.
Listen, we just did what we're told, and the next thing you know, I'm up visiting my parents, and my mother says, "Hey, did you see on Fox News?" And at that point, my parents didn't make a connection with us because Fox News just was very generic. Mm. They had some blurred faces, and then I knew that stuff was bad when I got a request from Inside Edition for a comment. I'm not bashful with the media. Yeah. I'll talk to them, good or bad. But that one, at that point, I threw my hands up. I was like, I can't believe how huge this is, become. Hmm. But you also understanding the climate of the country and the fact that the Secret Service were already
right
a target.
I think that's probably what escalated it.
Absolutely.
Where it normally wouldn't have been much of a story.
But. Absolutely. So everything's rolling out about the President Trump assassination attempt and all the failures there. And then, the director goes before Congress and basically doesn't give any information and then resigns. Mm-hmm. And so I understand how it rolled out. I'm fully apologetic to that business owner. And we offered, we would, pay up for anything that might have, been an effect on them, other than the fact that I'm sure they lost a lot of business that day, and that hurts. But
hopefully they've gained some of that back in notoriety.
Yeah,
people can find the 413 salon now, I'm sure.
Yeah,
so good for them, at least in that respect.
Yeah, and every time I say that's it, I'm done, I'm not talking about this, and then one of the girls will text me and say, "Oh, I just saw myself on." I mean, one of them texted me, "I'm on Business Insider." I don't even know how it got to Business Insider, and then
went viral.
Yeah. Right? She was more taken aback that there's the Secret Service agent who probably is at the root of this whole thing. Mm. Their face is blurred out, and here's my girls, in all their glory. Luckily, nobody knew their name or anything. So, hopefully we can move on. But I can tell you we had a planning meeting this week for another event coming up, the Josh Billings.
Okay.
And I said, okay, bathrooms.
Yeah. Number one.
Yeah, I want to make sure that's built into the plan here, even though we've been doing that for years. And we it was kind of just to laugh a little bit. But it'll be part of planning from here on in.
no doubt about it. Brian Andrews is my guest this morning, and he's the president of County Ambulance Service here in Pittsfield. And we're just finishing up our talk about the vice president's visit that just happened a couple weeks ago. Boy, we just had a packed couple of weeks of news and information and events, not only here in the Berkshires, but nationwide for sure. Let's talk about a recent award that your business has received, and it's from the American Medical Association. And from what I see, it's an award for cardiac and stroke care. Tell us a little bit about that.
One little correction there. American Heart Association.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought it was AMA. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's
American
okay.
Heart Association.
So, we returned to receiving this award. We actually received it many years in a row pre-COVID. It was a recognition that the American Heart Association originally started to recognize extraordinary care in the treatment of heart attacks or myocardial infarctions. Mm. And it started with recognizing hospitals, and then they said, wait a minute, you know, EMS plays a big part in the survival of heart attack victims. And so they developed some measures that they felt were important to the performance of taking care of, you know, heart attack patients. And so we immediately started to, you know, watch these measures, and we qualified for that award for many years. I lost track. I think it was 5 years we were awarded gold. And basically gold says you met all the measures at least 75% of the time, and you've done it for 2 years or more.
Because the key to heart attack and stroke treatment is time, right? Is getting there quickly and getting treatment started very quickly.
Yeah. You know, there's an old saying that we used to have that time is muscle and your heart's a muscle. So the more time passes without treatment, the more likely there will be permanent damage. And so just before COVID, they began to then extend to stroke care and say, well, you know, time is brain when you're having a stroke. And so these performance measures all were put out by the American Heart Association to qualify for this award. We unfortunately fell off the awards for a few years during COVID, not because our performance went down, because we actually watch our measures all the time, but every month we release a clinical news report to our caregivers in our organization, and it shows them how we're doing on I think right now we're up to 31 different measures, everything from how fast we put a 12-lead EKG on somebody who's having chest pain, to you know, our response times, to how many times we alert the hospital we're coming in with either a stroke or a trauma or a heart attack. So over COVID, we were just so busy with doing COVID testing and other things that we weren't able to gather those measures and send them into the Heart Association. So I was real happy now that things have started to settle out post-COVID, that we were able to get those measures to the Heart Association this year. And they saw that, you know, definitely we meet the measures. And so we received the Bronze Award because we met the measures for gold, except that we haven't done it for more than 2 years in a row of submitting data.
Interesting.
So next year when we submit our data, we'll hopefully qualify for the Gold Award. And that award looks at measures such as, like I mentioned, how quickly, well, number one, that you do a 12-lead EKG on somebody who's got chest pain. You know, you would think that's common sense, but it's not always. Sometimes chest pain presents in different forms. You know, with diabetics, with women, it sometimes is not obvious left-sided chest pain. Sometimes it's shoulder pain. Sometimes it's a crushing feel. All different symptoms you can get.
Yeah.
Their measure is you do it in 10 minutes or less from your arrival at the patient. It's that you notify the hospital that we've read the EKG and it looks like they are having a myocardial infarction, and they get early alert so they can be prepared for that patient. And then same thing with stroke care. And they also look at your cardiac arrest data, although that doesn't count towards the award. I think that's headed. They're going to head towards that. And trying to increase survivability in communities, because the nationwide average is about 5 to 10% if you
survivability.
Yeah,
if you have a heart attack.
If you have a heart attack and go into cardiac arrest, you only have a 5 to 10% chance.
That seems pretty grave, doesn't it? That statistic.
Yeah, yeah.
I had heard another statistic which was very interesting, which was of all the places, you know, different kinds of places around in the country. The one place where you're more likely, like 33% more likely to survive a heart attack or a stroke, was a casino.
Oh.
And I thought that was a very interesting statistic. I don't have it in front of me, but just the fact that you've got all the things sort of in place and ready to go there, where you might not in some other places. I thought that was interesting.
That's interesting. I thought I was sure you were going to say Seattle, because Seattle has actually been the leader for many, many years. They piloted some programs with community outreach in terms of CPR training for lay people, AED placement and such. And so they have gotten their survivability goes between 20 and 30%.
Okay.
Maybe
in the casinos it has something to do with everyone watching.
Yeah.
So you know everything that's happening with everybody.
Absolutely. There's always somebody there that's going to see it happen. Yeah. They have AEDs all over casinos. So, yeah, that makes sense. So our cardiac arrest statistic has hovered between 15 and 20%.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. But we started early modeling after Seattle, and we did some mass CPR trainings many years ago, and we'd like to do it again. But we do, you know, CPR trainings come a long way, too. Used to be, you know, 6 to 8 hours of training, and you had to do a perfect strip on these simulation mannequins. And now there's a lot more leeway because we know it doesn't have to be an exact science. And you can do most of the training online. Like that, we do a hybrid training where people go to our website, they sign up for the training, they do an online portion, which is a couple hours of watching videos and doing some exercises, and then they come to us and take a practical session.
That sounds like a benefit that came out of COVID and the pandemic era.
Absolutely.
Having things more available remotely and online.
Yeah. And they even were allowing you to test people remotely. If they had webcam capabilities, you basically did it back and forth on a webcam. And it worked, but we like to have that practical thing in person where we can take somebody's hand and put it in the right position, and et cetera.
No substitute for that.
Yeah, yeah, no. And then many years ago, there was a movement by the American Heart Association to do home CPR. They had kits you could buy, take it home. It had a little blow-up mannequin and a videotape you would put in, and then later a DVD that tells you how dated it was. they didn't see great success with that just because you need that human element of a live person kind of leading you along. So now the sweet spot is the hybrid, where you do learn about statistics and learn about anatomy, very basic things through an online webcast, and then you come and do it probably in most cases an hour. We do that once a week, so people and we do sessions when people can't make our scheduled one, and go through it with them.
So training, obviously a key component to this, and keeping fresh with all the skills and the need and the things that you need to know that are changing in the medical industry, I would imagine, all the time. We're talking with Brian Andrews here, the president of County Ambulance. In the couple of minutes we got left, this hour just flew right by. Talk about what an ambulance desert is. And we only got a couple minutes, but we've also, Berkshire County being kind of a rural, sparse populated place, in order to get an ambulance to your place, wherever you need it at that moment, quickly enough, you really have to have services, located in an area where they can get there in enough time. And we've seen, an example in North County where an ambulance service, went out of business and left a hole, a gap in some of that coverage. That's a dangerous thing, right? Is that happening more?
Yeah, that unfortunately is an increasing trend across the country. And part of it is that COVID really hit our industry economically and from a people power perspective. And so what we had been predicting, on the Mass Ambulance Association board, I took this year off, but I had been on the board and I'm active with the American Ambulance Association. We've been predicting this day was coming, and COVID just accelerated that notion. And so, as you'll see sometimes in the media discussion about EMS is not an essential service. There's a lot of laws that say a community has to provide police protection. They have to provide fire protection. Nothing says they have to provide EMS. And so we've been taken for granted for so long, and the models for reimbursement are just so antiquated that it hasn't allowed us to adequately compensate what people should be paid. In some cases, agencies can't keep up with the technology. Mm-hmm. So we are seeing a lot of services that are going out of business or, you know, folding, you know, nonprofits that just can't go on. And now you've got these communities that have no ambulances in town. And, you know, and sometimes it's not as easy as reaching out to another community and say, hey, can we utilize you? Because everybody now is becoming very territorial or very, you know, concerned about their own coverage.
Yeah.
So they're less likely to spread it out. So, yes, ambulance deserts is a real thing.
Wow. And so that's something that and I would imagine the same pressure on hospitals and things like that, especially in a place like Berkshire County where, you know, it can be difficult. And the payment structure and the whole healthcare thing, we could have a whole show about that.
Absolutely.
And maybe we will. we'll have you back on another time to talk about that. Brian Andrews, what a great hour that we had here on the radio, on the Morning Drive show. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Great
Thanks
to have you.
Thanks for having
you.
Me. I always enjoy air.
Absolutely.
I miss Bill, though.
Yeah, how about it? And maybe we can get you back in and do that country show you used to do.
Yes, yes. Now that I'm done with all my surgeries, I got to get my radio show back together.
There you go. All right, everybody. It's been great having you as well, our listeners this morning. And thanks for joining us here on Morning Drive. We'll be back again tomorrow to talk about the war in Ukraine. That'll be a very interesting program to tune into. So Jim Brooks will be with us. Stick around. We'll see you then. Take care, everybody.